ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The beach is Australia's playground. The names are world famous. Manly, Bells, Cottesloe, Kira, Noosa, to name a few. We are blessed with some of the most majestic coastline found on the planet. Culturally, it's where Australians flock for recreation, and it's central to Australia's identity. Tragically, this was shattered on Sunday when an act of terror at Australia's most famous beach, Bondi, hijacked a time of celebration. This week on Australia Wide, we will take a deep dive into the issues facing our coastal communities.
On this fresh tide line here, you can see these abalone that have just washed up.
The wildlife toll from the toxic bloom could be on par with some of the country's worst natural disasters.
It would be of equivalent scope, scale, importance as those massive wildlife losses we had from the bushfires in 2019.
More than 6 months into the algal bloom, South Australians are becoming used to murky waters.
Net fisherman Andrew Pisani hasn't caught a healthy fish in these waters for more than 70 days.
Every boat ramp now is empty. There's no vessels here at all, no tourism, no nothing here. It's a concern, and it's a big concern.
It's been described as an underwater bushfire, a toxic algal bloom that hugged the coast of South Australia, killing fish and starving mammals in its wake. The bloom went undetected until March, when a bunch of surfers reported a hacking cough after being in the water off Victor Harbour. Not long after, a mysterious scummy foam was found on nearby beaches. Then dead sea life started to wash up on the beach. TV screens were flooded with distressing footage of magnificent sea life like dolphins, stingrays and gummy sharks washing up on shore. The livelihoods of fishers was cut off with the knees with no catch. And what little could be caught was not appetising to customers wary of eating anything coming out of South Australian waters. For ocean lovers, there was a deep sadness about the massive change occurring in their place of play and relaxation. Today on the show, South Australia's algal bloom, one of the biggest environmental disasters of the year. I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk Country, Perth.
We had school holidays a couple of weeks back, and it's really disturbing for our town that there wasn't a person on our jetty. Not a person. And school holidays, normally there's hundreds of kids. And it's really disturbing because some of the parents come back and they couldn't get their children off the jetty quick enough because all they could see on the bottom was silver. And the kids are saying, what's on the bottom? And it was just dead fish.
York Peninsula Deputy Mayor Richard Carruthers speaking in September about the destruction caused by the algal bloom in South Australia. One of the first signs that something was not right was when a dirty foam started to wash up on shore on the bottom of the Fluria Peninsula in South Australia, and that was in early March. Then the dead stuff came. Fish, stingrays, sharks, octopus, dolphins washed up on South Australian shorelines, and the culprit was a deadly algal bloom. But what caused the bloom is becoming something of a political hot potato. The search for scientific explanation is being frustrated by a political desire for easy answers. As we head into summer, today in Australia Wide, we are going to look at the ecological disaster that decimated communities and industry in South Australia. To chat about it, I'm joined by my colleague, Caroline Horn, who's led the ABC's coverage of the issue from her home in Victor Harbour, and Dr. Mike Bosley, AM. He has a wealth of experience with 50 years in marine conservation and research, with a particular specialisation in the dolphins of the Port River estuary, one of the areas affected by the bloom. Thanks both for joining me from South Australia.
Thanks, Sinead.
Now, Dr. Mike Bosley, let me start with you, and I'd like you to step me through what happened. Tell me about when you first realised something wasn't right in the water.
Well, it was initially in April when the local media, the printed media and the electronic media were reporting lots and lots of dead things on beaches. And I went down to a local beach and indeed there were dead things everywhere. And that was concerning enough, but of particular personal concern to me was that I helped set up a small marine sanctuary on the other side of the Gulf from Adelaide. I was very concerned about whether the algal bloom had hit that little area and what damage it might have done. So with my friends who helped me set it up, we drove over there and got in the water to have a look. We'd no sooner been in the water a little while when one of the people, actually the owner of the property, was hit by the barb of a very large ray, which embedded 16-centimetre ray embedded in her arm. And the rays are normally very placid creatures. They're lovely to snorkel with, very, very beautiful, like big butterflies under the water. But this one was obviously unusually angry. And as I went to Pam's rescue to help her get up out of the water, another one lashed at me and just missed me by a few centimetres. So that brought it home to me very, very clearly that something was definitely wrong. And so I came back to Adelaide and wrote up a media release and distributed it. And I think that's when the government really started taking note of what happened.
And Caroline, you've been reporting on the issue from the get-go. What were you hearing in that early reporting?
Yeah, so this was back in about mid-March. So one of our local surfers, Anthony Rowland, or Rolls, who's become, you know, a real stalwart in monitoring the beaches and, you know, adding to the citizen science, he had been down surfing at Waipingo, which is south of Victor Harbour, on that weekend, and he noticed that he was coughing and his eyes were really affected, and, you know, they were really, you know, he knew that it wasn't right. So he actually started doing a little bit of a survey off his own back, just saying, hey, who else surfed here this weekend? What sort of symptoms did you have? And he tried over the weekend to, you know, notify Department of Environment or the EPA. He didn't have a lot of luck. And then we had this sort of wind change and this huge amount of foam that then blew up on those two beaches. And so that's when I went down and I met him and, yeah, took photos, and we spoke about, yeah, the dead sea life that had started to wash up. So there were sea dragons and lots of different types of fish at that stage. And then over the next few days, we started to see cuttlefish wash up near the Victor Harbour Yacht Club, and there were, like, octopus along Encounter Bay, and also huge numbers all at once up at Basham's Beach, which is a little bit further south than Victor Harbour. So that's when, yeah, it was really quite odd. But at that stage, you know, we were told by the government, look at this, we think it's a short-lived event. So everybody was thinking it would go away, and that's what, you know, we were expecting.
And I mean, yeah, like you said, at that stage you thought it was a short-lived event, and we now know that wasn't the case. In fact, actually, it was having a really detrimental effect on all sorts of species. Let's hear from fisherman Bart Butson, and he was speaking at a Senate hearing later on in the year. Let's have a listen to what he had to say about it.
Where I fish from is at the top of the Gulf at Port Wakefield, and I heard from my colleagues at the very south part of the Gulf that this horrible colour water was coming, and that once it come, there was no squid to be found. So it seemed to be that the squid and cuttlefish were the most affected. And then it was like a curtain of doom, honestly. So then I would hear from my colleagues at Edithburgh, Stansbury, I'm hearing from these fishermen, they're saying, oh, you're not going to like this when this comes. This is terrible, that the fish disappear overnight and or they move. So the guys from Edithburgh and Stansbury were reporting or just talking to their fellow fishers in other areas, saying that we had to move because we were fishing one day and we caught a bunch of squid and whiting, and then the next day the water was dirty and there was nothing. And it seemed to affect the calamari and cuttlefish first, where I was fishing at the top of the Gulf was the last place, and we knew it was coming, and we felt just hopeless about it. We noticed that the cuttlefish were on the top of the water dead. We could see hundreds and hundreds. Just one day after a storm, I'll digress a little, the government scientists were telling us that after the first storms it would dissipate and get better, so I wish that had happened. But after the first storm, we've seen dead cuttlefish, and then from that point on, within 2 weeks, there was just no squid, and I haven't seen a squid since. And then the garfish disappeared. They must have been a little bit more resilient. The garfish disappeared a little bit after that. And I guess I'm just talking about the commercial species, but we also witnessed dead white pointer sharks, dead gummy sharks, dead bronze whaler sharks, dead fiddler rays, dead smooth rays. All of the bottom feeding fish died quickly as well. Okay. Probably amongst the first group of fish to die, and I guess self-preservation is kicking in, and I was thinking, oh, perhaps it's just the fish that can't move will get killed and the garfish and whiting will be all right. But in time, we found out that that wasn't the case, because the garfish then died. There's very few of those left. The records showed there's hardly any being caught. And the whiting species appear to be the most resilient, and they were the last ones to hang in there.
That's fisherman Bart Botson speaking at a Senate hearing. Mike, can you talk me through what Bart Botson was saying there? Can you explain the behaviour of the fish and why some species were more affected than others?
Yeah, it's not actually my particular area of expertise, but from my understanding, some fish have large gill openings and some have much smaller ones. And the ones with the smaller gill openings were the ones which were most vulnerable to being hit by the bloom organisms. Also, the group called the elasmobranchs, the sharks and the rays, seem to suffer from an alternative cause of death, which related to some seepage from their blood vessels, which damaged their circularity system, and that they all washed up with this kind of blushing on their surfaces, which indicated that that something had gone wrong with their blood system.
It's really hard to listen to that audio and hear the list of all those beautiful fish and animals and not feel affected by it. Do you find that upsetting when it's listed off like that, Mike?
Of course. It's terribly upsetting. I mean, I've spent my life trying to protect the oceans and the things that live in the ocean, and to suddenly see them all dying around me has been terribly upsetting. And I'm certainly not the only one. Almost anybody that's seen it has been equally upset.
Mm. Caroline, obviously we heard from Bart Botson there that the algal bloom had a huge impact on fishers and their livelihoods. It's been a really tough year for them. How are they travelling now?
So there's still quite a few restrictions in Gulf St Vincent on commercial fishers. I believe that, from the calamari fishermen I've spoken to a number of times, they're still saying there's no squid, they're not seeing them, they haven't returned. But look, there have been reports that people are seeing schools of salmon around Kangaroo Island that are starting to return. So there is just that little bit of hope. But I have heard a few people say, okay, so the salmon are there, but what sort of balance are we going to end up with? It still feels like we're very much in a very much an unknown kind of phase of, how is the area going to recover? And, how do we help it, really, if we can?
Fishers were looking for compensation, and a big part of that was whether or not the algal bloom was considered an ecological disaster or not. Now, the South Australian Premier was very quick to come out and say it was, but that wasn't backed up by the federal government. Can you talk me through the politics of that, Caroline? What happened there?
Yeah, so there was a bit of I have to say, because the bloom started, that was noticeable very much over on the Fleurieu, and then it affected Kangaroo Island and down on the Lower York Peninsula for quite some time until it affected Adelaide's beaches in about June and July. And there was this big an echoing from people saying, oh boy, this is happening in Adelaide. Imagine if it was happening in Sydney. And quite a few people from regional areas kind of said to me, but it was happening in regional areas and it really didn't get a lot of attention. And but it was when they started to see lots of mass mortalities on those Adelaide beaches that our state government did start to say, oh, hang on, and that they invited the federal government to come over and to look, and they really wanted to, have it looked at as a natural disaster. And that prompted then the Greens to say, we want a Senate inquiry. And so we went through that process of going through that Senate inquiry, which a lot of people I've spoken to who spoke said they found that quite useful, just in the fact that they felt that they were actually being heard. So the fishermen could talk, as we heard there, about what they'd seen. So I think, though, there has been, from the commercial fishermen's, they, the fishing industry, they've been grateful for the help that they've received. There's been some criticism of the process and the length of time, perhaps, that some of the payments have gone through. But, yeah, there's, so there's been restrictions still on those commercial fishermen and also on recreational fishermen. So there's been bag number reductions and, yeah, different species and still not to be able to be taken in different areas. But perhaps similar to what's happening in WA, but perhaps not quite as extensive.
Mm. Mike, would you agree with Caroline there that because it originally, the first effects were felt in regional parts of the state, that it was a bit of out of sight, out of mind there for a while?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. The reality of where the media is located is where the news comes from, and there's not much media in the regions, I guess.
And it is hard when you walk, it's hard to convey the scope of what you see. Like, I can walk along the beach and I can say I'm seeing thousands of fish, but I think when people actually saw it in Adelaide, that's when they went, oh, wow, this is, you know, something quite extraordinary happening.
Going back to that debate about whether this was a natural disaster or not, because it became a real sticking point, from a scientific point of view, Dr. Mike Bosley, would you say it was a natural disaster of national significance?
No, and this is probably a bit of a unique perspective, but in my opinion, it's an unnatural disaster, because from my scientific understanding of the bloom's causes, the main cause has been the warming of the ocean. It's been 2.5 degrees higher than normally, and that's not natural. That's caused by climate change, human-induced climate change. So to me, it's an unnatural disaster.
For divers like yourself, Mike, the shock was what you could see at depth. And that description you had there of the stingray, the barb coming towards you, is one that I won't forget in a hurry. Let's have a listen to what diver Rob Blackburn had to say.
When there was fish kills washing up on shore, we were seeing that both on the surface and underneath the water. The algal bloom was thick, so hard to see through, low visibility. And, yeah, mostly dead sea life. Witnessing the toll of the algal bloom firsthand on marine life is, yeah, emotionally distressing. Above the water, you could be having a nice, sunny, clear day. Below the water, you would watch fish truly turning upside down on the sand and dying in front of your eyes.
That's diver Rob Blackburn talking about what he could see when he was diving at this time. Now, people weren't only worried about about being in the water and what they could see in the water, but they were also concerned about eating the fish that came out of it. Let's hear what fishmonger Ian Mitchell had to say earlier on in an interview with the ABC.
What's the mood of the fishes that you talk to who are affected by this bloom?
It's doom and gloom. It's doom and gloom. This is the worst I've ever seen it. I'm speaking to fishermen on a daily basis, and I've got fishermen in tears on the phone. I had one guy fish last week for yellowfin whiting. We held his fish for a couple of days. He just wanted a win. Now, he didn't get a win. He got a fair price for his dish, which, considering nowadays, prices are pretty low, so he did pretty well.
You mentioned prices there. What's causing the low prices at the moment?
And yes, so the South Australian public's unwillingness to eat fish that they believe is affected by this algal bloom.
That's fishmonger Ian Mitchell. As we come into the festive season, Caroline, has that shifted? Are people coming back to eating fish?
That is a good question, actually. I'm sorry, I haven't been out to the markets or anything like that to sort of to gauge myself, but even just talking to people, I think people are still concerned, as much as the government has tried to message and say, look, if it's available for commercially, they're saying it's safe, you can eat it. I still think people are just a little bit hesitant, and unfortunately, although the oysters that are very well tested, and so those are in the market, are safe, that we still have oyster farms here in South Australia that are closed and have been closed, I think some of them since April or May, over on the York Peninsula. So it's going to be a tough year for some of our seafood providers for sure.
As you said, they're up against it, but there has been some amazing science that has come out of this situation. I want to bring us to Kangaroo Island. You just mentioned Kangaroo Island there, Caroline, and to hear from marine scientist Roanna Horbelt. And she was talking about the science that's coming out of it, as well as that the leafy sea dragon, one of the emblems of South Australia, was deeply affected by the algal bloom. But let's have a listen to what she had to say.
I talked to someone yesterday who found another one which died in her hands. I've had the same thing happen to me. It's tragic. These are our emblem, and we didn't even know they existed in half of the places that we're finding them. So that's also a horrific, but, you know, interesting for the scientists, but a horrific experience for us currently on the island, yeah. But I'm actually also, being the forever optimist, I'm currently working on a reef resilience project. So rather than looking at death, our focus is now looking at life. And even if there are only three sea lions on those rocks, there are three sea lions on those rocks, and they're faring well. So now I think, and I want to get the community and the kids involved with that as well. So we take our focus away from the HAB as just death and look at it as, wow, what's surviving and how can we learn from that resilience? And I've been working on that for about 5 months now, and it's coming together nicely, and funding permitted, we'll get that launched pretty soon as well.
Marine scientist Roanna Horbelt speaking from Kangaroo Island off the mainland of South Australia. She speaks there, Mike, about some of the scientific discovery, like that there was leafy sea dragons washing up where nobody thought that they existed. Can you tell me more about the sort of discoveries that have been made in all of this?
Yeah, for almost all of us marine biologists, walking along the beach has been fascinating, if it wasn't so dreary. Fascinating in the sense that we're seeing creatures we've never ever seen before, even though we've been diving and snorkeling for multiple years. So that's provided some interesting stuff and also scientifically valuable information about the distribution and abundance of species. But it's at the same time it's fascinating. It's also extremely sad that these things, even if you didn't know they existed previously, you suddenly find them dead on the beach. It really upsets you.
Mm. There is something about adversity that often, sprouts ingenuity. And in this case, the citizen science projects that have happened as a result of it, I think iNaturalist is the big project that's going on. Caroline, that's really taken off. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so that's actually, I checked just before we came in, it's got 97,980 sort of logged. These are people logging different fish or different animals that they found on the beach. So this is not the, and scientists keep saying to me, this is not the total number of mortalities. This is a small amount. This is the ones that people have taken pictures and uploaded. And so the actual amount is, many, many, many times more. But what it is, so people who would normally, like myself, who would normally just walk along the beach, so you take a photograph of what you found, or you do, a count. And so people are uploading saying, I'm finding this here, this there, and I'm finding these sort of numbers. And so it's really made this database of information of what has washed up where since we started logging it back in March, because, some of the earliest photographs are actually mine taken down at Wepinga and Parsons and Tunkalilla, but from there it's just grown and grown, and I believe it's going to be quite a valuable resource. But there's also, out of that, sort of with the citizen scientists who came together with that, there was also another group who have formed a Facebook group called, I think it's Phytoplankton of South Australia, and so they're actually doing water sampling, and with the help of scientists they've actually learned, they've got microscopes and they've learned how to identify what they're looking at, and so they're logging their sample data alongside the official sampling that's being done by the Primary Industries Department. And there's actually now a website you can go to and you can see the PIRSA, so the Primary Industries data, but you could also click and add community data, and that shows up as well. And that was created by someone from Dr. Luke Mosley from the Adelaide University. So it's just been an amazing sort of response. And I think part of it has been, I know for myself, it's been quite, well, I say therapeutic, but at least you feel like you're doing something in the face of being able to do nothing. You know, perhaps if I upload this and I, you know, it might be of use somewhere along the line. And, you know, so people have been collecting, with permission, sea dragons, leafy sea dragons, and I believe a lot of the specimens have now gone over to the University of Sydney to allow people to be able to age them and to add to what we know about them. So, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, people now, a lot of scientists who have a lot more specimens than they wouldn't have, which is a, well, it's a silver lining of sorts, but, yeah.
Mike, in terms of that information, you know, this huge collection, I think you said 97,000 pictures, that's incredible. You know, does that have, you know, for the scientific community, not just the Australian scientific community, I'd imagine that's really helpful, you know, internationally, that database.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And I'd like to put in a plug here for a marine scientist called Janine Matheson, who's been the driving force behind the iNaturalist program. And she's been working 25 hours a day for months now, making sure this all happens and doing an amazing job.
What's your feeling going, you know, well, we're in summer, it's been an odd kind of start to it, all right, but I mean, the initial concern about the algal bloom, Mike, was because of warming waters. Are you concerned about what might happen over the summer?
I am, but I'm also hopeful in the sense that just yesterday and the day before, I went snorkeling at a place 50 or 60 kilometres south of Adelaide, called Second Valley, and the water was clear. There was lots of live algae and seagrasses, quite a few fish and various other species. So it was really, really important to me that there is stuff still alive, not just because that's a little island, but because that island can repopulate the areas that have been totally decimated elsewhere in the Gulf. So I'm hopeful that hopefully the algal bloom starts dissipating or even disappears, that there will be bounce back. That's a really important Christmas present for me.
Yeah. And Caroline, you know, when you talk to, you know, your friends and relatives, how are they feeling about doing, you know, normal summery things, going swimming, doing nippers, you know, snorkeling, kind of things that Mike's talking about? Are people keen to get on with it, or is there any trepidation about that?
It's interesting because I was down at Metropolitan Beach. I was at Brighton Beach in Adelaide only about a week ago. We were having some beautiful weather, and for the first time, and I went down there and there wasn't any dead fish and the water looked very clear and people were in there swimming. They had the dogs in the water and it felt like a return to normality, at least at that beach on that day. And I think people are really hopeful at the moment. In fact, Professor Mike Steer, who is the head of South Australian Research Development Institute, in his press conference last week, he said, look, I'm cautiously optimistic. And perhaps that's the way people are feeling at the moment in a lot of areas. I know still on the north coast of Kangaroo Island, there's still a lot of concern. There are starting to be rays and things wash up there. But so, yeah, I think people just desperately want it to get back to normal. And so we're looking and, yeah, hoping. And, of course, people with kids are particularly cautious with nippers. But, yeah, I think people are starting to look and to think, well, is it clearing? Can I go back in? And there's certainly an appetite for people to wanting to get back into the water. And, yeah, as like Mike was saying, you know, if you get back in and you see that regrowth, and there was another person who went to Second Valley and they actually posted this video of a sea turtle, which I believe is something quite unusual. Yeah, and so I shared that a lot with a lot of people because it just was that, wow, you know, hopefully, you know, you just want to hope that, you know, things can get back to normal and that they will get back to normal. Although, you know, what is the new normal? And like Mike was saying, you know, if we've got warming oceans, That's always the thing at the back of the head. When do we see a recurrence? And, you know, if we see and scientists have said to me, if we see recurrences and shorter times between recurrences, you know, the environment's got to have time to recover between them.
ending on a note of cautious optimism is a nice way to finish this program today. Dr. Mike Bosley and my colleague Caroline Horne, it's been a pleasure to speak to you on Australia Wide. Thanks very much for filling us in on what has been an emotional year for both of you, I think, because you've been at the front of it. And as an ocean lover myself, I find this quite a distressing conversation, even though I'm all the way over here in Western Australia. But I appreciate you both talking to me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sinead, for keeping the story going.
And that's Australia Wide for today. I'm Sinead Mangan. Thanks for listening.
ABC Listen.